You are listening to The Tenants on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. To support us, visit patreon.com/ Kyle Dempster Studios. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of The Tenets. My name is Kyle, and I'm joined by my co-host, Stark Realm. How are you, Stark?
I think I'll live.
Gonna live through it?
It'd be terrifying, wouldn't it?
it's been a little bit of a crazy time here in ESO lately. We're gonna start off the show with some news this week. Usually we dive straight into our topic, but we've been working on the Summerfall event, which is going on from now until the Friday the 28th of September, which is, I believe, just the end of this week, right? Yeah. So we're in the final stretch of this. And if you don't know what's going on with Summerfall, you just need to own a copy of Somerset, which is conveniently on sale at the moment. You can check that out at the ElderScrollsOnline.com/store. Pick up a copy of that on sale. And once you get into the game, if you know the points of interest that are on maps, the little eyeballs, basically, they're just little pretty spots that Zoss is set up within the game, something to go look at, something to go explore. Might be some nicer loot in that area or something of that sort. All you need to do is go explore all of those points of interest on the Somerset map, and then you also need to go to Arteum and see the one spot out there. For those that are really new to the game, which is what we cater towards here, you will need to complete some of the main Somerset quest to get to Arteum the first time, or use a friend to teleport out there. For example, our guild has been ferrying people around on both PC, NA, and EU. And there's a lot of information at once, but so to get do it through the main quest line is very short. You're just doing like one or two quests there.
Yeah, it's the first main quest.
Yeah, very simple. And also, you complete this on, if you're playing on, let's say, PC, for example, you can complete this on once on PC North America and once on PC EU. You do not need to do it on all of your characters. You just need to do it on one character per server side. If you happen to have an Xbox and a PS4 laying around that you also own Somerset on, you can do it two times on each of those consoles as well. Were you going to say, Sark? Sorry, I kind of cut you off there.
I was about to say that, wow, I completely lost my train of thought.
Yeah, you're
it's
fine.
Cool. But yeah, no, you just need to find those. There's the total of 10 locations. You can actually track it in your achievements menu. So that's part of your journal on PC. I'm not sure where it ends up on the controller UI. And you can go through there and find those nine locations in Somerset and the one location on Arteum. And that's all you need to do. The payout for this is going to be right now, for sure, we're going to get a pet. Everybody who owns Somerset and logs in before the 7th of October is going to get a pet, and we're going to get a mount, probably. We haven't actually gotten enough people through to guarantee that, but it's very close. The real goal here is there's a massive house on Arteum, and everybody who owns Somerset who runs through this event, well, not whether you run through this event or not, Somerset by that date, if the community manages to come together and enough of us complete these goals, everybody's going to get this house. So that's going to be a really nice thing for somebody there, especially if they're new to the game. But even if you've been playing for a while, these are very nice locations.
Yeah, we're talking like a house that would usually retail probably from like $170 US, basically. Converting that into crowns, something, I don't know, probably like a 17,000 crown house or something like that. So it is massive. It is gorgeous. You can actually check it out in the game currently. It would take some exploring. It's not listed as a map marker point. You have to go find it first. It's in Arteum, so an easy zone to explore, and you can surely find a guide online. But gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous place. So like Stark said, we're not there yet. If you go to the Elder Scrolls website, the easiest thing to do is just search Summerfall event on Google, and you'll get a nice status of where we stand. They update it each day around, I think, like 10 a.m. Eastern or something like that. 10 a.m.
Seems to be about, yeah.
Something in that time. And basically, they tally up overnight everyone that got the achievement. So and you're trying to get the Somerset Pathfinder achievement is the one you're looking for. Again, like Stark said, you need to find the 10 zones. And we're right now, as of Sunday, September 23rd, we're sitting at 63% towards our goal. We need to get to 100% to get the house. I can't remember. What's the exact percentage that we get the mount?
66.
Oh, okay. So we definitely get that tomorrow.
So we're very close to that.
Yeah. Well, as of Monday, we should have that horse, unless everyone just stops playing overnight.
No, it's worth noting we're not going to be getting these things handed immediately. So if you log in and you're not seeing a horse, don't panic. It is coming, but they're all going to be delivered at the same time when the event's over.
Good call. So yeah, there's a pet, a mount, and a house. And like you're saying, yeah, 66. And this is not 100% of the people that own Somerset. This is not 100% of accounts that have been created. I've seen on Twitch a lot of speculation like that, and Zoss immediately, when they started the event, came out and said, no, we've chosen a number that is arbitrary, that people can actually achieve. It's something we think the community can get towards. So it's a little bit blurry that we don't have exact numbers to give you, but the point is, if you have the time to do it, and it doesn't take more than probably half an hour to explore, if you have that half hour, go explore all these points, collect your way shrines throughout Somerset. Those will help you when you're doing your quests in the zone anyway. And to be clear, all you need to do is actually walk up to the point of interest. It will show as discovered on your map. The little eyeballs will appear black on your map until you go there. Then they should appear white. So that's how you know you've explored it. And like Stark said, it's in your journal. It'll reflect there. You can actually see a kind of a check mark next to the name saying, yes, I have seen that spot. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, to be clear, it's under Somerset Exploration Achievements. And you're looking for Pathfinder there. And that'll list all 10 of the locations you need to find. So once you complete all of them, the achievement will pop up on your screen, and then you're good to go.
Yeah, there you go.
That's it.
And if you need help with it, and you're playing on PCNA, my guild's always around to help. My neighbor in game and over on Twitch, it's Kyle Dempster Studios, so it should be simple to find us. You can find all that in the description of this episode. But yeah, if you're struggling, we're happy to help you out with that. Come pop in some night and ask for advice. We can walk you through it. We're really trying to motivate the community. It's really cool to see all of the other Elder Scrolls communities motivate their people. Like, I'm seeing all the streamers do these big ferrying runs. Even on the last ESO live stream, they did a big one. Like, Gina was taking the controls there and running people through EU. So that's really cool. Really cool to see.
Yeah, she was doing that with Leonard. So you're actually getting the lore background for all these players.
That was so neat. That made it so worth it to me. Like, I that part really stood out. I was like, oh, now I'm actually learning why this one keep is here and what the story is behind it. Good stuff. Before we get into the other part of the episode here, just a shout out that the Holojack crown crates are now in the crown store. If you're looking to get in the Halloween spirit, those guys are up. You can pick up a pack of them. Inside those, there's cool things like a variety of mounts that have a la Sleepy Hollow. They're, you know, you don't have a head, but you got a pumpkin in your hand that flares up whenever you jump or whenever you do the jumping animation. So there's some cool housing items like a skull, a lantern. What else? We got zombie skin, zombie personality, some random pets that are in there too, some things that are not so scary. All overall, good thing, except I got what I like to dub, and pardon me, the shit camel. He is a camel with red eyes, and he's the only one of the mounts that I did not want to get. So thank you, RNG, for sending me the shit camel.
This is how the camels find you.
Did you do any of these crates, Stark?
I did the ones that I got for free. I think I got the badger, so that's freaking terrifying.
I got the little viper. I can't remember his official name, but the little...
Oh, yeah, you got the... I remember the one you're talking about. It's
yeah,
probably the least appealing of the flying snakes.
No, but you know what's
for the ones
I don't like? I hate him out. But yesterday we put him in one of our guild halls in a display case, like aquarium thing, and he looks badass in there. He's like perfect for that. So maybe not so fun to run around with. But
well, as long as he's safely behind glass, you're safe.
I'm probably gonna put my hand in there. Let's see. Also, a shout out that there are Twitch drops enabled. So if you're someone that hasn't made your way over to Twitch yet, during this time up until, let's see, it ends this Thursday, September 27th at 7 p.m. Eastern time, there are Twitch drops enabled. So any Twitch streamer that you watch, You need to watch, I think, more than 10 minutes of their stream, and you will, the next day, receive an Ouroboros crate in the mail. Those are great because even though the items in there aren't always the best, I think there's only, like, one mount and one pet that people really strive for. There's a lot of items that can either help you while you're questing and new to the game, like experience scrolls, potions, some foods that'll give you bonus effects. If you don't want to keep any of that stuff, you can always break it down for crown gems, which can be used to purchase many items. So look out for that. Stop by if you want a chance at that. All you need to do is link your Twitch and ESO account through your ESO dashboard, and you're set up and ready to go. Without further ado, Stark, what do you say we jump in and continue our conversation from last week? Last week we were talking about skills and the leveling process. So we started off telling people what different ways of leveling are: questing, dungeon finder, battlegrounds, grinding dolmens, such like that. And we started to get into the idea of leveling up your class skill line, but we didn't have much time for else. So do you want to kick it off with weapons and armor this week and how you can level up those skills?
Okay, so with weapons and armor, it's fairly simple, and it's actually fairly similar to how class lines level up. If you have the skills for those weapons or the one associated with that armor, and each armor has one ability slotted, you'll get a chunk of XP delivered to you to that skill line each time you gain XP from a course. So it should be about 15% of your total XP is also awarded to that skill line for each slotted skill in that line. This can create an interesting situation where you can actually advance skill lines that you don't currently have gear for slotted simply by slotting the skill. But the downside is you're not going to be able to use that skill for anything. It's just there to pick up XP for the line. Also, having gear slotted for that type will also earn experience for you when you gain XP. It's a similar calculation, though I'm not sure on the exact value. So if you're completing a quest and you've got two weapons slotted on your front bar, then your dual-wield line is going to advance. If you're doing this, you've got a sword and a shield in your front bar, then one-hand shield will advance. I'm not sure offhand if it measures each individual piece or if it measures which weapon is slotted on that bar, just overall. But either way, if you're wanting to advance your bow, you can do this by slotting a bow and slotting bow ability. It's not advanced by using the ability. You don't need to actually use your bow. You just need to earn experience to have your bow equipped, which is a little different from the other game. Probably worth pointing out.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's actually a very good point. So just need to have your weapon and armor equipped to get it, not necessarily the skills.
Yeah. And I think we've mentioned this yesterday, but it is it's something that we forget to do, where it's you'll go sometimes when you're wanting to advance a skill quickly and just slot it while turning in quests, and then forget to switch to the bar that has it on, so you're turning in on the other skill line. Certainly done that enough time.
Yeah, great point. We did mention that. It's something I guess you pay attention to as long as you're really amped about the next skill. At least that's when I tend to remember. I'm like, right, I really need this one skill so I can morph it. Like, gotta have that on. If I've already, you know, if there's nothing right around the corner, I do tend to forget. So just swap your skill bars, people.
Yeah. Okay. And this is the end of the uniform ones. If somebody's telling you that the rest of them earn skill XP the same way, that's not actually true. All of the ones after this, all the skill lines we're going to cover after this, have unique systems that they level with. So you have your world skills. This is kind of a strange grouping because originally it was just the soul magic, which is a function of this main storyline happening to your character, and then either the vampire or skill line. Later on, Ledgerman was added to this, and that's still a little bit strange to see there because I don't know what they mean when they say world, but they all have unique priorities for how they advance. So in order on the character sheet, Ledgerman's on top. This is your ability to steal things, your ability to act thief. And so it advances based on stolen items that you find. Find in scare quotes. You're going to find those in some interesting places. When you fence them or launder them, you'll get Ledgerman XP. When you pick someone's pocket, you get XP. When you pick a lock, whether anybody owns the lock or not, you get XP. And actually, that's it. Those four ways are the only ones that actually advance the skill line. Leisureman also has an undisclosed function where it seems to affect the loot table for items you steal. The higher your Leisureman is, the mm-hmm. better your chance of getting blues and purples. And not exactly sure on the numbers there, but it's something you kind of notice when you're using it.
Right. You and I kind of tracked this down last week. We did a little research on this and some, a little bit of assuming on our parts too, that this is kind of a myth that I see all the time. People saying, oh no, you can't affect your skill, your loot table. But as you go around, you're actually picking locks and things. You do tend to find, you start off with just green items that you're looting, if that, if not whites, I guess.
A lot of whites, a lot of greens.
Yeah, a lot of whites, some greens. Then you start moving into mostly greens and some more blues. And so you're moving this table up. And like I said, a lot of myths, but what we tracked it down to was whenever One Tamriel came out and all the zones became kind of squashed, that your character is leveling through and things are adapting to you, vice versa, that they kind of made this shift to your loot table being here. Am I correct in thinking, Stark? I believe you told me that previously, when a zone was, let's say, this zone is level 10 to 15, your loot table was determined for the entire zone, that when you picked a pocket there, you were definitely going to get either whites and greens or greens and blues.
Yeah, with a few caveats. One thing to be very clear is we're talking about stuff steel has a better loot table, not everything in the zone improved, because that doesn't happen.
Good call out.
Also, for most drops in the game, the rarity, the actual probability for the rarity, is based on what activity you did at it. If you're just picking up an overland set, it has a high possibility of being green, a smaller chance of being blue, and a very small purple. And it's rolling that based on a list of option abilities. So it varies what's happening.
Yeah.
Dungeons, if they're on normal, will give you four set items and a random level for a non-set item. And then also on vet, they always drop purple set items and then random for everything. So this is, we're only talking about the treasures you find and steal, just to be clear, because otherwise it sounds like, oh, I need to level up Leisureman so that I can get better drops when I'm running Bowman's, and that's not how it works at all, unfortunately. No. It'd be really nice if it did. The other major caveat is, in some situations, some characters pickpocketing based on their profession have a chance to drop unique items, or unique in scare quotes again, because it's a specific item that's unique to that profession. One example is, for example, the throne motifs that you can craft.
Ooh.
And I say motifs, they're furnishing recipes. So you can craft these, but you need to get them off of nobles, and they need to match the race that you're trying to get. So if you want the Breton throne, it needs to be pickpocket off Breton noble. So that's sort of this weird little caveat there. Those are always gold, and I don't know if those are affected by the loot table change or not.
Huh.
Similar stuff with, like, the skulls. I used to remember where the skulls dropped from, but again, it's pickpocket off of people. Daedric Cultist is one, I think.
Ooh.
There's, what else we got? The wanted posters that come off of guards. You'll see those in the store a lot. Those are always gold rarity, but... So there are some exceptions to this, but if it's like you're cracking him open and you want to see if he's got like a 40 gold white trash, 100 gold green trash item that you can take to the fence, that's affected by your Leisureman somewhat.
And so I think it's important to add this, like interject this little tip for Leisureman, that if you're reading things online or you're talking with people, people will tell you do not sell white or green items, but keep in mind that you are working to level this skill up. The Leisureman, when you're actually selling an item to a fence, a stolen item, it has a daily cap of how many you can sell. So towards, you know, the maximum levels of Leisureman, you really do want to be only selling the most expensive items. But when you're starting out, don't let people discourage you. Do get rid of your whites and your greens as long as you have enough of a cap for today. If for example, let's say you got a bunch of whites and greens in your inventory and you know this is the last hour of ESO for you tonight, do go and sell all of those. I just want to be clear because I've seen some people get pushed down the wrong path. I've had people try and push me down that path and I was like, you're telling me the meta, but you're not seeing the context. Like, do get rid of things so you're making that money so that you're actually getting the skill points. Because like Stark said, you're leveling this up as you fence items. So get rid of what you have, max out your fence cap for the day if that's your interest.
Yeah. And yeah, it is, you do want to make a decision whether when you're looking at something to sell it, whether you just want to get the XP to the skill line And again, especially if you're not going to be on again before, decide if you want the XP for it or if you want to hold out and you want to keep farming. Because if you're going to keep, if you've got time and you can just keep farming, then absolutely the meta is the right way to go.
Yep.
Junk the whites you get and just keep going until you get the get a collection of greens or get a collection of blues. I know people that won't sell the greens. They'll save for and fill it up that way. And it's a lot of money, but it takes more time. And if you just don't have the time to kill, then absolutely dump the whites if you haven't maxed Leisureman yet, because that's still XP you get. And otherwise you just miss out on.
Yeah.
Even if the money isn't great. So yeah, that's, yeah, it's good advice.
We're just trying to teach you guys to be thieves. That's all. Nothing mm-hmm. to look at here. Sorry. Hey, on top of thieves, Stark, want to talk about stealing people's souls?
Yeah, that's a fun thing to do. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the soul magic skill line is a byproduct of your character's main storyline involving Cold Harbor. Okay. It's a little weird now because you get the first skill in soul magic when you complete the tutorial regardless, but it used to make a lot more sense when that was the Cold Harbor. And I suppose for some people it still is if they don't have any of the expansions.
Can you even buy the game without expansions now?
I think so.
I thought you had to get Morrowind at least. Maybe I'm
wrong.
You
might be right. I don't know. You might be right.
I think you're always going to start with either Vivec City sort of stuff in Vardenfell or Somerset. But who knows? You're out there and you have, if you're still playing.
Yeah, if you wake up in Cold Harbor, then yeah, you got the original one.
Shoot us an email once you get out of Cold Harbor.
Yeah. So this one, the only way this advances is by following the Harborage quest line. You'll get introduced to this basically the first time you step foot on the mainland with a hooded figure who approaches you and wants you to meet somebody for them. When you follow this through, each time you complete a quest, you're going to get a skill point. But also, when you're completing quests in there, you get XP towards progressing soul magic. And that's the only thing that advances the skill line. Slotting skills does nothing. You don't get XP from earning XP normally. So when you're killing monsters, you're not advancing soul magic. The only thing that this does, that having the ability slotted, is it lets you advance the active skills in the line. That's it. And that's going to be a common theme with the...
Yeah, is there... I mean, do you find anything of this skill line to be useful, Stark? I mean, it's got a passive that is semi-decent, but I would even call it maybe a waste of 2 skill points. And I'm thinking of Soul Summons, which is mm-hmm. its first level allows you to revive once every 2 hours without expending a soul gem.
Yeah, and the second one is every hour. So yeah, the skill line is a little interesting because it depends on how where you are as a player.
Mm-hmm.
When you're starting out, you're going to get hit and killed by things and go, well, that sucks. Now you can either respawn on the spot and it costs a soul gem, which, again, when you're first starting out, that's not trivial.
True.
Even if you've been stacking them up for a little while, you've got 30 soul gems, that's still, you've only got 30. When you're at a point where you're trying to shuffle 3,000 soul gems around your account, it's probably not worth it. You can probably do better with that skill, those skill points, because it doesn't matter. But when you're starting out, yeah, this is useful. Similar thing, when you're starting out, the soul trap ability, the active ability, which you get for free, is useful because it does do damage. It's a ranged attack that actually does do damage. And it will has the chance to fill empty soul gems, which makes them more valuable. So again, we're not talking about gold income that's going to go and change your life, but it will be extra gold you didn't have if you choose to sell it, or an extra revive if you keep dying someplace. The ultimate has some use in PvP. I'm not 100% sure who uses it or why, but I know that people do use it. The explosion on low health gets used, similar reason, because if you're about to die to somebody, you might as well try to take it.
Yeah.
I want to say that gets used in some gank, in some bomb blade builds, but I honestly don't know.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
And then also the other thing floating around there is the passive that will passively trap souls.
Yes.
So every time you kill something, you've got a 5 or 10% chance to capture a soul. If you're running around with empty soul gems, this has a chance to proc every time you kill something. And again, it's not going to be life-changing money, but it's money. It's some extra money. Might as well. So is it useful? Kinda.
Yeah, I think
that might be useful to you.
Right. I think that's where I'd net out too. I mean, it really depends on your playthrough. I think like Stark said, you know, if you find yourself dying, definitely useful. If you're someone that's pretty good about survivability, skill points could be placed better elsewhere, but you can see some value in it.
Yeah.
Next one we're going to talk about is one of my personal favorites, which is vampire and vampirism within Elder Scrolls Online.
Yep.
Want to take that one away, Stark?
Yeah, vampire just advances based on earning XP. It doesn't care about your slotted skills at all. It doesn't care if you feed. It doesn't care if you use your vampire abilities. It doesn't care about any of it. It's just, did you earn XP? If you did, you get a full chunk of that copied over to your vampire.
Yeah. And it's a skill chain, too. I mean, I think totally opinionated here. Yeah. But, I mean, you get some fun things in there to play with, like Drain Essence, so you're consuming the enemy's life force, their magicka, and restoring some of your health.
I'd actually go so far as to say, like, situationally, all three abilities are useful. And, ironically, the one you pointed out, Drain Essence, is probably the weakest.
Good point. True, actually.
Bat Swarm is fantastic. It's a really nice, it's not going to be, oh, this is the best ultimate ever, but it's really good. And then also Mist Form for some situations can be exceptionally good because that's a lot of damage mitigation. So you can just avoid taking a lot of damage with that ability. Both of those have real end game uses. Drain Essence is, it's got uses. I'm not going to knock it, but I wouldn't slot it most of the time.
Good point.
But still, it's a really good skill line for that. And then, ironically, the things we just identified are not the reason most people pick the skill line, because the passives are freaking mental. They're great. So, yeah. The fun thing about it, though, is if you just want access to the passives and you don't care about any of the actives we just listed off, which is a lot of players, you don't have to take them. You can just take the passives as you get them. It will advance. It will feel slow because Vampire was originally, the original plan was you get this at level 40, and by the time you hit level 50, you would have maxed Vampire as you were leveling up. So it matches the original XP curve from level 40 to level 50. Actually, it might be 38 to 48, but it's in that range.
Wow.
And so the XP progression curve was changed with Morrowind, so it's kind of hard to see that now. And the end result is you have something that takes a lot of XP to level up. Not as much as it takes to get those last 10 levels now, but it takes a lot of XP to level it up. So it is leveling. It's just slow.
That's interesting. I had no idea. And some passives that people... Because Stark is right. I mean, I think this is a fun, really, really fun skill chain, but I don't use the actives. However, passives like Supernatural Recovery, which at its most filled out spot, it gives you increases magic and stamina recovery by 10%. That is great. That people
Undeath
love
is
that.
Really nice. Yeah, Undeath is really nice because you can soak additional damage when you're at low health. It actually kicks in at 50%. So it's really good. And then for stealth-based characters, the Night Stalker passive, which lets you move at full speed and stealth, is really, really indispensable. There's a few ways you can get that bonus in the game, but this is one of the easiest ones to simply maintain on a character.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of reasons to chase Vampire, but it's going to be a slow trip, especially if you're just starting out with the game. It'll take a while to max it out.
Also, remember, you're going to be a little weak to fire, so watch out for that.
That's something funny, too, because it's early on when you're playing, especially before you get to the champion system, and we're not going to get into that right now, obviously, the fire vulnerability is really significant. As you get further in the game, especially once you start getting into the champion system, that fire vulnerability becomes less and less significant.
True.
You'll still be aware of it. You'll still take more damage from fire. But a lot of times that kind of damage, when it's delivered to you in the game, is in a form you can either avoid, or it's not severe enough to kill you even with the mitigation penalty. So, dipped in kerosene, yes, but you can still survive. It's not the end of the world.
Okay, and our next skill line to talk about here is werewolf. So, what's cool about werewolf, Stark?
Well, you turn into a 9-foot-tall snarling death beast with a bad case of fleas.
Bad breath, I would imagine.
Yeah, probably that too. Okay, so werewolf's another skill line like vampire where advancement's a little strange. In this case, though, it doesn't care about your XP at all. It just asks you to kill things while you're wolfed out. Specifically, 225 things to max it. That's all it takes. Just 225 kills in werewolf form. which sounds a lot easier than it actually is because the transform only lasts about 30 seconds. We'll go into a lot more depth about this eventually, but the short version of this is just you get 5 XP for the werewolf skill line every time you kill anything as a werewolf. And that stacks up, and as you advance, you unlock more passives. It's a really nice playstyle, but it's a really distinct playstyle. The one thing that's really interesting about XP with this, your werewolf skill, your werewolf transformation actually has a third skill bar. It's one of the only ways this can happen in the game. And when you're wolfed out, you have a complete set of 5 abilities that don't exist in the normal game at all. Nice. Here's the thing. You need to buy them with skill points and upgrade them with XP. And even now, it is way easier to slot one of those on your human skill bar. You can't use it, but you can earn XP towards leveling that skill up and morphing it and maxing out the morph. So it's a little strange, but you can just slot these onto your normal skill bars and advance those, just like we've advised elsewhere, where it's like you want to max out a skill. Because you're only going to have 30 seconds to transform, it's going to be longer than that once you get the hang of it. It can be a lot easier to keep advancing these skills outside of werewolf form using this trick.
That's a very cool trick. I mean, I didn't know that until you told me very recently. Again, I've not played around with werewolf very much, but I would have had no clue that was even a thing. So I'm really glad you brought that up. Overall, they seem like a very, very cool class, or class is totally the wrong word, but it seems like a very cool skill line to get into. But
werewolf kind of is its own class.
That's kind of where I got tripped up, because you are kind of dedicating to a different play style. For example, if you're playing just a regular stamina, whatever, Templar or something like that, you are making a fairly significant skill shift once you decide you're going to go into a werewolf, meaning you're actually going to be playing with a werewolf bar a lot of the time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then it's going to have its unique skills, and it forces a specific kind of berserker play style. It's a really cool play style. It's unique for stam builds. Like, there's nothing else like it. But the thing about werewolf is when you're wolfed out, that kind of is your class, and in a way that even with the normal classes isn't true. It's almost like, I guess the closest comparison would actually be the weapons too, but it's its unique thing. You transform into a werewolf and then you are this other thing. It's cool.
Yeah, very awesome. Big distinction from Vampire, who is almost entirely passive. This guy is almost entirely active. So go out and explore with those. I'd love to do a deep dive episode into werewolves sometime so we could actually chat about pros, cons, things like that.
No, we're coming up on Halloween, so it is the season.
Oh, good point. Without further ado, we'll get into guilds here, because we promised these. And guilds, in this sense, we're not talking player guilds that you're socializing in or doing events in or something like that. These are guilds within the game. Quick rundown of them. Last week, we prescribed you guys to go get into the Fighters Guild and the Mages Guild so you could start, you know, having access to retrieving lore books and things like that. But we are also talking Dark Brotherhood, Thieves Guild, Sigic, and Undaunted. So would you like to start us off with the two easiest, Dark? Fighters Guild and Mages Guild?
Yeah, these are open to everybody. When you start up the game, you can go, you can sign on. That's it. You're a member. Fighters Guild advances by killing the Daedra and undead scattered around. So it advances by 1 XP per time you kill one. It doesn't actually care about your XP gains per se, though the active skills you unlock will. Also, anytime you kill a champion or boss grade enemy, champions are the ones with one dot on either side of the health bar, and then bosses will have more than that. You get 5 XP instead of 1. So this is anything that's classified as a Daedra or as undead. Also, when you complete dolmens, you'll get a chunk of XP. This is every time, by the way.
Do werewolves count too, or are they different? So it's just Daedra and undead? You're right. It says Daedra undead. For some reason, I thought werewolves were in there.
Huh. Because there's a passive further down the skill line that lets your Fighters Guild abilities proc their effects on werewolves as if they were Daedra or undead, but they're technically separate.
Stark knows all, everybody.
I don't think NPC werewolves give you Fighters Guild XP with the passive, but it's just this side of possible that it does, and I don't remember.
No, I think you're right. No werewolves, everybody.
Yeah. Completing Fighters Guild dailies will also get you, I want to say 10, which is kind of funny because the Fighters Guild dailies are to go out and complete 3 dolmens in a zone. So you're going to get a lot more than 10 from turning those in. But again, there's also that option. So, and those are basically the only ways to advance Fighters Guild. That said, Daedra and Undead are not exactly hard enemy types to find. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of ways to get creative and kill a lot of them in order to advance the skill line.
Yeah, work on killing those zombies, everybody. And then that leaves us with the Mages Guild, who is also the one we prescribe to join. And that's mm-hmm. very simple. All you do is go find your local Mages Guild and sign up with their charter person in the hall. And mm-hmm. how do we level this one up, Stark? This is a longer one.
It'll take a little bit. Well, might actually be faster if you focused exclusively on it. But anyway, basically finding lore books. So these are the purple books you find that have a slight glow effect around them, and they'll disappear from the world when you pick them up. Each time you find one of those, it gives you 5 XP for the skill line. And each time you complete a collection of them, so these are pre-selected groups of 10 usually, you'll get a larger chunk of XP. As with the Fighters Guild, there's a Mages Guild daily. This charges you to go into a public dungeon and complete the group event and pick up a doodad that's sitting there next to the boss. Now, doing that won't get you Mages Guild XP on its own, but turning the quest in will. So unlike Fighters Guild, you're actually going to get less from this. Still worth doing. Also, in both cases, they're a nice payout of XP if you're looking for something to do and don't want to advance through storylines for whatever reason.
Good point. Also, something to shout out for the people that love housing out there. Completing the lore book set in a zone will allow you to buy that set of lore books to place around your house. So you'll get a package of books. You open it and you'll get each individual book that you went out there and read. And that way you can place around your house and reread it anytime you want. So if you're someone that likes to have something interactable in your home, there's a twofer in that sense. You know, you're doing it to level Mages Guild and you're doing it to get a housing item. So
probably worth mentioning on those libraries, though, they don't actually count as discovering the lore book. So if someone else comes into your house and reads one of your books, they don't get credit on that.
Great point.
And also, if you want to read through the lore books you found, those can also be found in your journal under the library tab, I think. So that's actually available to you regardless whether you buy them or not, if you just want to go back and read through them. But if you want to stick them around your house, yeah, absolutely. It's cool.
Yeah. Now we're on to my absolute, I think my favorite guild by far, the Dark Brotherhood. How do you feel about them, Stark? Fan? Not a fan?
Not a fan of maxing it out. Mm. Ironically, I like the storyline associated with them, but ironically, the skill line's a little bit of a drag for me.
A grind, so, maybe?
Mm-hmm. So the way you advance the Dark Brotherhood is completing quests. This includes the main quests, I believe, mm-hmm. for the Dark Brotherhood. It also includes the dailies from the Listener. Was it
yes.
the Listener?
Yes.
Okay. And then finally also from the... great, I forgot his name. The Dark Elf who's in the Sanctum will quite happily... Elam.
Look at you. You know his actual name. You guys are close.
Yeah. Oh, I love that guy. He's got freaking great dialogue when you turn in kills. Because it's like, he always has this wonderful snide comment when you're turning it in. I love the NPC. The only thing I don't like is the two load screens between him, his target, and then back to him.
Oh, I agree. It's, yeah. You go into the thing, you pick up his quest, then you're going to a way shrine. Yeah, it's a long
thing. It's a long one.
It takes way longer than it does to kill the target.
Yeah, no, it really does. But yeah, so those are the ways you advance Dark Brotherhood. And as far as I know, those are the only ways to advance Dark Brotherhood.
Yeah, one thing to shout out is that the better you do in the Dark Brotherhood daily quest, there are some bonuses that you can try and get past. And I have tips on those if anyone's interested. But there's some good tips to get around it. For example, don't kill your main target till you've killed your bonus target. And if you clear out all the bonus objectives, you get 20 reputation points instead of 10. So that's kind of it. But yeah, you're right. It's a little grindy. I didn't notice it so much because I was already running those daily when I was new to the game. I was like, I just need some consistency every day that gets me doing something progressive. And so once I actually got to the main quest, I was just rocking through it. But you're right. It could be very grindy.
Well, and I was playing it when it originally released. So the goal was, I want to complete the main quest as fast as possible. I get one daily per day. Then I'm going to go back to Dren and or to Elam and try to go through all of his quests. And it's like, okay, this didn't work the way I was hoping. So very different perspective from basically the same progress. Thieves Guild advances basically the same way as Dark Brotherhood. You get XP from completing the main storyline. You get XP from doing the tip board jobs. And you get XP from completing the main storyline for the Thieves Guild. And in this case, I'm actually a little bit more fond of the tip jobs simply because you have more flexibility and a lot of them go through multiple zones. But
oh, true.
Yeah. Same setup there.
Pretty good quest line. Pretty good stuff.
I like it. I really like the Thieves Guild quest also. It's really good stuff.
Yeah. Sijic. This one people might have heard. It's kind of a little infamous in its way.
It has. So here's the funny thing about Sijic. Outside of Werewolf, if you know what you're doing, Sijic is the fastest skill line in the game to level. You can knock this out in an afternoon really easily if you know where you're going. If you don't know where you're going, it can be really tedious. There are guides floating around. A number of people have posted video guides saying, okay, here's where they are. Even just having a map saying, here's where the rifts are going to be can make it go a lot faster. But this is a skill line that you get with... Actually, I should probably point out, this is a skill line you get with Somerset. Mm-hmm. You need to complete the first quest and the main quest. So like we were talking about with the Summerfall event, same quest has to be completed. Then you have the option of joining the Sijic Order. The skill line itself is really useful, especially for if you're doing things that aren't quite expected. Or if you're new to the game, the infused weapon active ability can be useful for increasing your DPS as you're learning how to play. But the short version with Sijic is you just need to go to preset locations on the map and close portals. The funny thing is the maps you're given are a little outdated. There'll be geographical regions that exist in the Elder Scrolls. It's just not how ESO tends to define them. Like you get the Iliac Bay, which is the map from Elder Scrolls to Daggerfall.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually three different zones in game. That is Glenumbra, that's Stormhaven, and that's the Al'Kir. So you're looking at the map and it's like, yeah, it's each of these places. And the game sort of asks you to figure this out on your own.
Yeah.
So either be familiar or look at the map and then look at the world map and say, okay, I can see where this stuff is. Also, it's a little tricky when you're doing it the first couple of times to try to find stuff. So on the whole, if you want the skill line immediately finished, it can be a little frustrating because it does kind of discourage you just rushing through your first time. If you're going out there and you wanting to explore, it's a neat way to unlock powers, to see a lot of the map. I think if you started on Somerset, it's probably a good way to get you on the mainland and exploring.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also one that does not really reward you if your only goal is to get a power up as quickly as possible.
That's true.
Even though it is one of the fastest skill lines to level, because it doesn't require a lot of you. And I think, like I said, it's entirely focused on completing the main Sijic skill line. There's no grinding. There's no extra dailies. It's just complete these 10 quests and you're good to go.
And that's a Sijic order in a nutshell. And mm-hmm. So you'll hear a lot of people complaining about it. A lot of people are tired of doing it on their characters and such. And I hear there's a lot of Netflix and run around pretty mindlessly and close portals. But, you know, I think like Stark was saying, there's a lot of guides, add-ons. If you're running any add-ons, some of them might give you the option to mark the, what are they called, time rifts? Is that what they're called? Time?
I believe so. It's rifts.
So you can close those on your map. Or I'm sorry, you can mark them so they show up on your map if you get like map pins or something like that. So there are options.
I think Destinations has it. I think you do. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Destinations is a good one for that.
No, I was going to say, I don't think Destinations has it enough. I think it's just map pins. No, it's okay.
I can't remember which one I actually run. I think I'm not even going to try. I give up. I quit.
It's okay.
So Undaunted, one of the ones that I'm still working on, but I just don't do it daily.
Undaunted is the PvP'er's bane. It's a great skill line, though. Okay, so Undaunted has a lot of history, but this is one of the ones you'll have access to, even if you just bought the base game and don't have anything else. These are adventurers that wander across Tamriel and stick their heads in very dangerous holes, getting them lopped off in the process. They're dungeoneers. So the way you advance this is you complete achievements that are associated with dungeons. This can mean you get the achievement for completing a dungeon the first time. It can mean you get an achievement for dealing damage in a dungeon or blocking, killing a certain number of enemy type in the dungeon. And it can advance based on a few other achievements that are focused on specifically the Undaunted itself. There's one, for example, to find 16 different Undaunted hangouts in the world and buy a beer at each for the Undaunted that are there. And that's actually worth doing if you just want a little bit extra push, because it's a fairly substantial chunk of Undaunted XP. The other thing you can do is work for them. You can take their quest. So every day the Undaunted have 4 dailies. One of these is going to be available fairly early on, and that's from an orc named Bulgrel. He'll tell you to go out and do one of the dungeon, or do one of the delves. So not a dungeon, but one of the small mini dungeon type things called delves scattered throughout the game, and come back and report to him. And he'll always put an extra requirement on clearing the delve. It's not just going to be kill the boss. It's going to be do this and kill the boss, or do this and then kill the boss while it's... Sometimes he'll ask you to take a debuff on yourself before you fight the boss.
Oh.
Sometimes he will ask you to collect stuff in there. In one case, he actually tasks you with putting some stolen stuff back in the delve before you kill the boss. So there's a little bit of variety there.
I've never done one of his. That's interesting.
It's probably worth doing. So these pay out, I want to say, about 10 XP each. It used to be 5, and then it was increased at some point. And you also, he actually has a series of achievements associated with him. So the first time you complete one, you'll get an extra dose of XP from the achievement for doing one of his quests. Also, I think it's the 7th and the 30th have achievements associated with him. So you keep coming back, and this will advance your Undaunted skill line. Undaunted's kind of noteworthy because it has a few things that are really useful for group play.
Yeah.
And the entire thing is focused on this. It also has some passives at the end that are really useful for pretty much anybody. So it's encouraging to get out there and run dungeons. Oh, right. When you hit level 45, this is one of the only things that's level gated in the game like this. And to a certain extent, it doesn't matter that it's level gated, because you can do the content anyway. You just can't get the extra credit. When you hit level 45, you can start taking pledges. And these are a synchronized set of 3 dungeons that are picked each day on a rotation. And you run these quests for each of these 3 NPCs. And you get a payment of Undaunted XP in addition to any achievements you completed in those dungeons, related to those dungeons. So running your pledges can be a good way to start racking up additional Undaunted XP if you're trying to advance it. It's also tied into a couple of endgame systems that we'll get into at some point. It's worth noting, though, you can still go into those dungeons or queue into those dungeons if they're accessible to you. You just don't have access to the Undaunted quest, which is just an extra couple of lines of dialogue and Undaunted XP each day.
Yeah, those pledges can be fun to run as a group. You know, you get some friends in there and start running those. That's a good way to go explore some things you might not otherwise see, or just, you know, get back into dungeon content if you haven't been doing it for a while. I think we ran
Pledges have the advantage of getting everybody in the same dungeons on that day. So it does help to focus the community. Normally, if you're doing something like DPS, you can expect a long queue. On days when that's the pledge, it'll shorten up some.
That's a great point.
Probably get in there.
Didn't think about that at all. That's very, very interesting. Huh. Good call, Stark. Okay. So after Undaunted, we've got Alliance War, right?
Yeah. So the Alliance War is the original PvP for the game. This is a massive campaign in the middle of the map. And it has 2 distinct skill lines. It has Assault and Support. Especially for group play, these have some really useful abilities. But fortunately, the method of leveling up is fairly simple. It's just earn AP, which is the PvP currency, Alliance points. It doesn't care how you get the AP. You can actually level it up from your daily rewards, although that isn't going to be very efficient. You're in a long time for that. But you can level it up any source of AP you get. And the big things here are Vigor, which is a major heal for STAM characters, Caltrops, which is a major DPS ability for STAM characters, Barrier, which can be a really nice catch for healers in 4-man content, and Warhorn, which is something that becomes part of the community's focus for 12-man content, though it can also be useful in 4-man. So that's 3 of the abilities out of, I think, 12 total. A lot of them have use, so there's certainly reasons to get into PvP and collect this. You can also get this from the Battleground system. because when you complete quests in battle, when you complete battlegrounds and when you complete quests associated with battlegrounds, you'll get some AP payouts from those. When you complete quests in Cyrodiil of any kind, you'll get AP for that. So there is some PvE content in the game that awards this, but you're just going to have to be in a PvP zone when you do it, which means you are subject to attack from other players. It's fun. Like, it's worth trying out. And the skill line is absolutely worth working on, at least until you get to the stuff you want unlocked.
Yeah. I find this is something I need to work on a little bit harder. I need barrier out of there. But like you said, most people's first interaction with this, if you're not a major PvPer, would be probably the daily rewards or awards, the ones that we just login rewards. Those usually will award some alliance points here and there. And that's why I'll go, oh, I haven't done any PvP on this guy. Why do I have some of these skills available? That will be that.
Also worth noting that PvP, like, you have an overall rank in PvP that goes up to Grand Overlord, I believe. Each time you rank up, you actually get a skill point. So this is one of the ways you can get a lot of skill points in the game. If PvP is your thing, it does help with not having to grind quite as much elsewhere for skill points once you're getting to level cap. And it is viable to take a character from level 10 to level 50 in PvP if you're good and you're earning a lot of AP as you're going, and actually just keep getting skill points from that without having to worry too much about going back out to get skill points in general.
Very interesting. The last one we have, which is perfect timing because we're going to wrap up right on time this week, and this is my favorite one. I just really enjoy this aspect of the game, and that is racial skills. So there's your first selection in the game, but this is something that unlocks, what, probably around level 10, I think?
Five. Yep.
Starkness off.
So technically this is actually 10 different skill lines. You'll only ever see one of them on a character at a time for obvious reasons. Your racial skill line is actually matched to your character's XP progression. It is a distinct XP progression on its own. Like, these are separate XP pools. And I think I mentioned earlier, Morrowind rearranged the XP progression, like the curve for leveling across the board. The first couple of PTS builds, and I think even on live, that was not related over to the racial skill line. Oh. So you would level up and you could actually see that you were getting the same amounts of XP for both, but your levels were going faster at low levels and your racials were going faster at high levels. You get to the same point, I think about the same place, but it's, you know, these are technically distinct. However, for now, and in the basic design of the game, your racial skill line gives you access to a new passive roughly every 5 levels. I think it skips one, but I'm not 100% certain. And these will, as you level up, your character will actually start to take on their racial identity in their passives. So unlike a game like Skyrim, where you start out and you can immediately tell the difference between a high elf and a Breton or a Nord or an orc, in ESO, initially that's just going to be cosmetic. Yep. And then when you hit level 5, differences are going to start creeping in. This is one thing where we've said, don't worry too much about your race, that a lot of people can panic about. Mm-hmm. Because then they get to level 5, they've committed a little bit of time to the character, and then they're like, oh wait, now it has all these effects, and I didn't know about this. Well, part of why I'm saying don't worry about that too much. You'll see these, and they're not huge, they're not game-breaking.
Right, and that goes back to that idea that, hey, if you love Argonians and you only ever want to play Argonians, well, solid choice regardless, I think.
Yeah, you say. Actually, but, yeah.
Pick someone else, I don't know. Okay, Nords, you love Nords. You absolutely love Nords, but you want a Magicka casting Nord. You're not
going to be any worse off.
Right,
you're Nord.
Right. So you are fine. These are like, I don't even know, like 5% or something towards a certain reduction, or even that.
Yeah, Nord at 6% damage mitigation. It's, I want to say, 20% health recovery. Might only be 10, which sounds more significant than it is, given we're talking about health recovery. But that's a different story.
Yep.
I'm trying to remember. Yeah, I'm trying to remember what the Nord bonuses are beyond that. They're not spectacular.
We should go listen to episode 1 of our podcast, Dark. Maybe that would enlighten us.
That's a terrifying thought. Yeah.
But I enjoy them. I enjoy the racial skill lines, just because that's when you do, like you said, you start to feel what your character is. And I tend to play a lot of Imperials for Stam characters and Bretons for Magicka characters. And I kind of make that distinction because Bretons are better with magic cost reduction in their skills through that chain. And Imperials get more, like, I think max stamina and some extra health and stuff like that. So again, it won't break the game if you go the wrong or a different race. There's some ways to min-max it, but like I said, choose the race. Choose what's going to make you happy and continue coming back to the game, not just also, because you feel pigeonholed. Go ahead.
Also worth considering that with the same thing happens with your classes to an extent. I think I can't remember how far you got with your Templar, and I'm like, yeah, you need to plan a little bit further to get a real feel for it. But the same thing does happen with your classes. At low levels, they will feel fairly similar to each other. Mm-hmm. And as you level up, their personality will emerge and you'll start to see, okay, this is how this class feels as opposed to that one. Because if you just start out and you're looking at, for example, I have a Stam Nightblade, I have Stam Sorcerer. At low levels, looking at those two together next to each other, it's going to be like, well, these are very similar characters. They're not that distinct. Once you're actually leveling them up, you can start seeing where they change, where they become different classes, feel different in gameplay.
Yeah, you're totally right. I noticed that same thing with, rolling a Dragon Knight and a Warden back-to-back, I was like, well, these almost, you know, the first couple skills you unlock, these are pretty similar. Okay, one's got a heal, but I'm like, this is almost identical. And you're right. Give it probably more than the first 10 levels to really let that emerge.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, because in this specific case, even just on tanking, Dragon Knight, they're entirely different animals.
Yep. Well, I think we did a good job of recapping some of those skill lines. So that's something to look into. Those are a lot of different guilds you can sign your character up for. Mage's Guild, Dark Brotherhood. Sorry, I said that totally wrong. Dark Brotherhood, Thieves Guild, Sigic, those are all locked behind some form of content, whether it's for Dark Brotherhood and Thieves Guild DLC. Sigic is behind the Somerset expansion or chapter. So those ones you might not be able to get into if you don't have that content. All the others, meaning the Fighters Guild, Mages Guild, Undaunted, the Alliance War, and obviously your racial, you'll be able to get into right away and start experimenting with those guys as you work towards them. So we hope that kind of guided some people. It's some very good content. I love playing skill. Yeah. The skills are some probably of my favorites.
Probably worth pointing out, the only skill lines in the game that are gated off are those three. Dark Brotherhood, Thieves Guild, and Sigic are only available if you have the appropriate content.
Yeah.
And also, sort of by extension, the Warden is only available if you have that unlock. But otherwise, everything else is open to everybody. So any of these other skill lines, like if it's not class restricted, your character could potentially have it, even if you're not buying, specifically chasing out and looking for a specific upgrade. This includes Vampire and Werewolf. You do not need to buy those from the store. You can get that from other players. You can get that in-game.
Yeah, very much so. In fact, we'll encourage you, do not buy that through the Crown Store. It's very, very expensive. We know many, many people that will be willing to give a bite. So, bite or whatever to turn. Yeah, it's easy enough. Well, Sark, anything else you want to add to skills for this week?
I don't think so.
Well, then I guess we'll call this episode quits. You guys, remember, if you want to get into Somerset now, want to start messing around with the Sigic stuff, go ahead and check out the ESO store. They have Somerset on sale during the summer fall event. The community will love you to death if you get in there and you can start running the summer fall content, getting that Pathfinder achievement we talked about at the top of the episode. We all want that amazing house, and it's a really cool community effort to see if we can actually achieve it. So we look forward to that. Like I said, I have a guild on PC North America. If you're interested, it's called Unlife. It's open to new players, veteran players, whatever your interest, you're welcome to join. Easiest way to do that is to come hang out with us for a minute on Twitch and let me know. It's twitch.tv/ Kyle Dempster Studios. We'll be over there. There's going to be links in the show notes below. That's a pretty good way to ask some live questions. Stark's usually there hanging out in chat throughout the night. And if you have something on your mind that you really want to ask us, kyledempsterstudios@gmail.com is the email. Feel free to send us something with questions or ideas that you'd like us to do like a deep delve on in the future. We're happy to look into what you guys are looking to learn. In the upcoming episodes, we're going to talk about battle mechanics. We're going to finally get into that. We decided to delve a little bit deeper into skills. We'll talk about battle mechanics next week. So blocking, bashing, dodge, rolling, things like that. And shortly after, we're going to get into some of the events that go on in the game, because the Halloween event is just around the corner. So we want to give you guys a little heads up how to get into that content. That's going to do it for me this week, Stark. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate you coming along and sharing all of your wealth of knowledge with us. This man knows more than any ESO player should. yeah, if you want to follow us over on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/ Kyle Dempster, Stu, STU. And Stark, what's yours again?
On Twitter?
Yeah, do you remember?
Oh, yeah, it's my given name, Michael J. Schwartz.
There you go. Twitter.com, Michael J. Schwartz. See us over there. Till next week, Stark. Have a good week in Summerfall.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Take care.